The Temple Emmanuel Men's Club presents Football, Faith, Fatherhood, and Friendship. A conversation with Trey Burton, Chris Maragos, and Jordan Matthews of the Philadelphia Eagles. This program was recorded at the Men's Club breakfast on Sunday, May 1st, 2016. Moderating the program is Rabbi Larry Cernovitz.
Good morning, everybody. Shabbat Tov. Good morning.
Good morning.
You can do better than that. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
I spoke over.
There is something that is very poignant and important about being here on the day of days. So the importance about being here after Passover is we talk about freedom, and we talk about who we are as individuals, and what Passover requires of us is to take that matzah that, thank God, none of us have to eat anymore. We all had enough, but from the leaven to the unleavened. So that unleavened bread, that matzah, is that foundation, is that what is human being, what are we really about fundamentally, as opposed to the leaven that rises, the superficial stuff from one day to the next. And when we think about the symbolism of matzah, we think about Torah and what Torah has to teach us, and about who we are in the core of our being. And there's a beautiful piece in Torah that's shared about the eagles. Because the eagles are actually the only football team mentioned in the Torah. And that's important to mention, all right? So it says that after Passover, God brought the Israelites out of Egypt on eagle's wings. You can't make that up. It's in the Torah, all right? It's in the Hebrew Bible. And here's what's important to understand about that, which is, what does it mean to be brought out on eagle's wings? What does it mean to fly? And anybody who knows anything about eagles, where do eagles carry their young? The highest point above, not below. Why? Because if anything happens, the parent goes down first and not the young of the eagle. And that's why God carrying the Israelites out on eagle's wings on the top to protect them and to be there with them. And that's really important because for those who may not have attended a lot of men's club events this year, and particularly for those who have attended the men's club retreat, which Rob Mintz, who has year after year done a great job, and if you haven't gone in the past, you should think about going in the future. But men's club is not simply about machismo. It's not about just brute strength and force and about being men. It's about really what being men are all about. And what is behind the scenes? You know, we have, as men, we have a certain persona that we're supposed to have. We're not supposed to let people see emotions. Well, we're not supposed to see people understand that we're actually human beings deep down inside. And it's that great word that native Israelis are called. They're called sabras. And sabra is the Hebrew word for cactus. Because on the outside, they tend to be a little rough. But on the inside, they're soft. They're sweet. There's a human character and being. And that's about men in general. This morning, and I want to introduce Pastor Ted in a second, my friend and my partner in making this happen this morning. But this morning, you're going to meet three incredible men. And I could have said three Philadelphia Eagles, but these men are quality people. And that's the piece. First and foremost, what we're talking about this morning is what humanity is about. And the conversation may be a little bit about football, and we have to talk a little bit about football, especially after the draft. But we're going to talk about faith this morning. We're going to talk about fatherhood and about family. And we're going to talk about friendship and what that means. Because at the core of who every single individual is, no matter what our title happens to be, there's much more to every human being
than what meets the eye. And you're going to meet three incredible individuals this morning. And on behalf of Temple Emmanuel and the Men's Club and Jared Lyons, where Jared are you? Where'd you go? Eating. We thank the three of you for being here this morning. It's our honor and our privilege to host you. We can give a round of applause for... Now, this wouldn't have happened without my friend and pastor, Pastor Ted Winsley. And I want to give a little bio about Pastor Ted, as he's affectionately called, Pastor Ted. He's a native of Dover, Delaware, and currently resides in Sicklerville. Pastor Ted serves his local church full-time in the capacity of assistant pastor. He lives to disciple and mentor others, and he loves to be used by God. In addition, he's been the chaplain for 15 seasons for the players of the Philadelphia Eagles. He's a passionate preacher and teacher who loves to convey biblical truths that transform lives. He left his position as a national sales manager for a globally known fashion wear company, and he always dresses beautifully, my friend. To follow the Lord's call on his life, Pastor Ted's been married for over 22 years to Minister Dawn and is the proud father of two children. Tara is a junior in college, and Theo is a junior in high school. And it's my honor to call Pastor Ted to join me this time. So with Pastor Ted at my side, it's my honor to introduce our first Philadelphia Eagle, Jordan Matthews. Jordan, number 81 for the Philadelphia Eagles. He was born on July 16th in Huntsville, Alabama, and a graduate of Madison Academy and Vanderbilt. For those who know his career, one of the most prolific receivers in SEC history, Jordan was selected by the Eagles in the second round of the 2014 draft and is a franchise all-time leader in receptions, 152 by a player in his first two seasons in the league. A tireless worker, Jordan led the Eagles in receiving yards, 997, receptions, 85, and receiving touchdowns, 8, during his sophomore campaign in 2015. If he could be a superhero, he would be Spider-Man. Three items desired on a deserted island, a boat, the Bible, and Kanye West's graduation album. The talent he'd most like to have is the ability to play piano. His nickname is J-Matt. First jersey owned, and I'm not going to explain this because if you don't know about Jordan, then you need to do your research. His first jersey owned was Jerry Rice, the San Francisco 49ers. If he could play another sport for the Philadelphia 76ers, and his favorite athletes growing up, Jerry Rice and Ray Allen, and his favorite TV show, NFL Top 100, and favorite movie, Remember the Titans. We give a warm welcome to Jordan Matthews.
All right. I want to introduce Chris Marigos, known as the Ghost. Chris was born on January the 6th, 1987, in Racine, Wisconsin. He attended William Harlech High School and went to Wisconsin. He and his wife, Sarah, have two sons, Micah Mason, and reside in Philadelphia, Naples, Florida. He's one of the top special team players in the league. Chris Marigos took a long and arduous road to reach the NFL. He made it despite not receiving any offers to play football coming out of high school or any sort of ranking on rivals. He also walked on at both Western Michigan and Wisconsin as a receiver and received a scholarship offer for only his final season with the Badgers. He joined the 49ers as a rookie free agent in 2010 with a sign-on bonus. Well, I'm going to tell all his business here. All right. His biggest pet peeve is sitting in traffic. His favorite TV show is Shark Tank. I like that show. Three favorite throwback jerseys, Michael Jordan of the Bulls, Julius Irving of 76ers, and Magic Johnson of the Lakers. His favorite quote is from his father, "Whatever your mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve." And his favorite family tradition is going to every Wisconsin home football game as a kid. I want to once again introduce to you Chris Marigos.
Yeah.
And last but not least, we can mention BG, right?
Yeah, you can mention him if you want to.
And last but not least, Trey Burton. Trey, born on October 29th in Venice, Florida, graduated from Venice High School, earning a degree, and graduated from Florida with a degree in family, youth, and community science.
Yep.
He and his wife, Yesenia, right?
Yesenia, yep.
Have a daughter, Ariella, and a son, Jackson. Trey runs a summer football camp in his hometown of Venice with former high school teammate and current NFL free agent,
Dree Archer.
Yep. You guys got that? As the son of a single mother, Trey hopes to get involved in charities that focus on helping children who grow up without fathers. A versatile threat in the collegiate ranks, Trey originally signed with the Eagles as a rookie free agent during the 2014 offseason. He's been a key member of the Eagles special teams unit in his first two seasons as he recorded a blocked punt and a blocked punt touchdown return in 2014 and led the team with 19 special teams tackles in 2015. His desired talent, and you gotta listen to this one, right? Being in a church choir. His dinner guest would be his grandfather, John McClintock, who passed away when he was in high school. Player models his game after James Casey. His first jersey was Dan Marino, Miami Dolphins. And what he'd be doing if not in football is a financial advisor. The funniest Eagle, he believes, is Jordan Matthews.
Hands down, not even close.
This is not even close. We'll see a little bit of that this morning. Favorite musicians, Lindsey Seals, Lecrae and Andy Mineo. And favorite athletes, LeBron James and Stephen Curry. And his favorite book, All Pro Dad, by Mark Merrill. Give a warm welcome to Trey Burton.
Hands down.
So we are going to be going back and forth this morning with questions for our honored guests. And we're going to start out with non-football questions, because we can always get to football.
There you go.
So we're going to start with faith, and how has faith, and not just with football, but how has faith been a part of your lives growing up and a part of your lives currently?
Goes to the question.
Go ahead, Ghost. You go first.
You know, I think for me, initially, you know, I grew up in a household of faith. And for me, it was kind of one of those things where as I was growing up, there were so many other things that were distracting me from... Is that
both
a little bit?
Me,
both. There are so many things that were distracting me from seeing what God was trying to do in my life. And he was calling me, and he was kind of courting me to him. But the reality of it was is that I was kind of doing my own thing. I was excelling in athletics. I was trying to find satisfaction in whatever it was, you know, other than what he was trying to supply for me. And so really when I was kind of, you know, growing up in the ranks, I was trying to place this God-sized hole, you know, in my life from all these worldly things, whether it be friends, women, athletics, whatever it might be. And all those things would last for a little bit, but then they'd fade away. And so for me, as I kind of kept going, and the more things I tried and I tried to consume myself to fill that place that God was intended for, you know, all those things lasted for a little bit and they faded away. Until that one time when I was kind of going through a bunch of trials in high school, I got caught using drugs. I got caught selling drugs. I was actually caught vandalizing people's houses, and I almost got expelled from our school district. And it was this point in my life where the more things I tried in this world, the more my life was kind of in a downward spiral. And the reality of it was is that I was trying to do it under my own strength instead of relying on his strength to get me through this. And so for me, that was really when I kind of waved the white flag and really surrendered my life and said, all right, Lord, listen, you're going to have to do this thing. You're going to have to give me the strength and the ability to walk this life that I'm trying to do on my own, that I can't do under my own flesh, and really give you the reins and allow you to guide and direct me and to really guide my course in terms of where I need to go. And so that's really how faith has kind of really kind of brought me into this point. That was my sophomore year of high school. And things have changed. You know, I see the difference of understanding the whole time up to that, everything was trying to say, what can I consume for myself and how can I make my name great? And for me, once I came to faith and really saw about what God wanted to do in my life and how he wanted to use me, now the script flipped. And it was one of those things now where it was like, okay, how can I honor you with what you've given me instead of consume it for myself? How can I turn this back to praise and honor to you and use my life to honor and glorify you with? And so
that was really kind of how faith became, you know, kind of the substance of who I was when I was in high school.
Awesome. Okay, can y'all hear me? Yeah, good. So I think similar to Chris, my faith walk kind of essentially started off as a kid. I grew up in a household. I mean, we were in church from 8 till I think almost Tuesday. I mean, literally, we would be there all day. Like, I'm like, Grandma, we're still going to services? Like, this is the fourth one of the day. Like, but it was just something that we did, you know. Growing up in Alabama, my roots were from Mississippi, so we grew up in the old church, too. So it was just something that I was always used to. And then I also went to a private Christian school, too. So I was, raised, Baptist, but also went to Church of Christ Church. So I saw all dynamics of what worship looked like. And so it was one of those things where even though, you know, obviously, like, faith is like being able to see what's not seen, I technically always saw it everywhere I looked. There was Jesus. There were Bible verses. My mom didn't even watch TV. She just used to watch the channel where it was black, but it had like Yolanda Adams and the song she was singing on it. And that was it. You know, that's all she watched on television. And anything I brought home that wasn't something that she liked, it was the devil. I mean, even football was the devil for a little bit. So it was such a, you know, growing up in that environment, I felt like I was already, safe. I was already in God's word. So I never really like branched out to really, seek, who Christ was for me and really like seek out my journey in Christ for myself. And it really wasn't until I went to college and God wasn't everywhere. And when I looked around, there weren't people who had immense faith. There weren't, devout believers, their faith walk or anything like that. So the biggest thing for me was during that time, I started really having to figure out, wow, what does the Bible really mean to me? Like, who is God to me? And if I'm going to, go on this walk, am I going to do it halfway or am I going to do it, full speed? And, the thing was still just in college, it was still rocky. It's like I knew the word, I had my foundation, but I really wasn't living out the way that I knew that I was supposed to. And it was so hard because I would go home, I'd be this person to my family, to my friends, but the second I went back to college, I was a completely other person. And the hardest part for me was I knew what was right, but at the same time, right before I was going to do something wrong, I would just flip off the God switch and then I'd go do what I was going to do and then I'd come back and flip back on, forgive me, Lord, and then I'd try and go out and then be this Christian again, So the biggest thing was for me was being able to decipher, okay, if I'm going to do this, like, I really have to do this faith walk on my own. Nobody else, my mom, my grandma, my father, my brother, my teachers from high school, nobody's going to be able to get me into the kingdom except for me. And it was at that point that I really started realizing, okay, I got to start making, like, some changes. And really the biggest thing that helped me was really when I got to NFL and started being around Trey and Chris, because I was around other men who came from different environments that were living it out. And once I started clinging on to those guys and changing my environment, changing the people that I was around, and started being around other men of immense faith, it really started helping me be able to see who God was for me. And that's really when the transformation started happening. So, I mean, I couldn't thank these guys enough. I couldn't thank Pastor Ted enough. I mean, we go out to eat. And before growing up, I used to think it was the weirdest thing. Like, we were joking about it. Like, we know if pastors ate. We know if they left the church. Or, we were like, you guys just float around and just talk to God when we're not looking. And it was one of those things where we would sit down and we'd just have real conversation. And I'm like, this man has so much pressure on him to not only preach the word of God, but also live it out. But he can sit in here and he's able to live a fulfilled life and it doesn't seem like that pressure has gone to him. How does he have this much peace? That's our looking at the other men. How do these guys have this much peace? Why is there so much things in my life that so many things that are up and down? And it was because of that relationship with Christ. It was kind of that steadfastness that he gives us. And that was something that I really wanted. And that's really what started bringing my faith to the level it is now. So really appreciate the guys around me. I really think that's what helped me.
Hello. So my faith walk, it's really cool listening to other guys. I mean, I've heard their stories many a times, and everybody's story is unique, but if you really sit and listen to it, everybody has a really similar story. We all struggle with the same things. We're all men here. We all struggle with the same things. We all basically just have the same deals that we constantly are fighting and trying to overcome. So I won't be as long because basically my stories are really similar to theirs. But I guess my faith walk really grew, or I really grew in my faith when I really started seeking God for myself, kind of like what Jordan said, and not having a faith like my mom or not having the faith like my grandfather and things like that. So I think that's probably when my faith grew the most. And also, it's when I made the decision, my favorite Bible verse is Jeremiah 29:13. You will seek me and you will find me when you seek me with all your heart. And so until I really started seeking God with all my heart, and like I said, doing my own walk, that's really when my faith really kicked in.
I just want to ask a question still dealing with faith, but as men, and even, of course, even as men in the NFL, what would you all say is one of your greatest or the greatest obstacles to your faith? You know, what are the things that you find kind of has a tendency to be able to shake your faith as a man in the NFL, and how do you handle it? How do you deal with it? How do you overcome it?
I think the easiest answer to that question would be money and being able to do really whatever you really want to do. Coming from college, as you guys could imagine, and you know a lot of the NCAA rules, we're not allowed to have any money at all. We're basically dependent on university for food, for housing, you know, really everything. So once you get to the NFL, even league minimum is a ton of money, you know, compared to what you've had in college. And then also, like for me personally, I grew up with just my mom. She had three kids total that she had to take care of. So obviously, you could imagine money is pretty scarce. So being in the league and just having a good amount of money, and then obviously finding out how fast that money can go, and you know, and the things that you can do with it. Probably was my biggest test, just your freedom. You're able to do really whatever you want.
I think for me it's crazy. You know, I grew up in a situation where my parents were very, you know, they were financially stable. So it was never a situation where I played football really for money. Like, I never was one of those types. I always played it for, like, you know, respect. I really wanted respect for the man across from me. But the thing that was hard when you get to NFL is understanding sometimes, like, when God says no. And that was one of the biggest things for me because, you know, it's the crazy dynamic of the NFL is you work year-round. We work harder than any other sport, but we only get 16 opportunities. Like with baseball, they play a game, you play bad, the next game, boom, you're up, like the next day. Basketball, you get 82, with baseball, 100-something, my bad.
Right.
So there's so many things that go into that, and it's so physical. You know, it's so mentally stimulating and draining every single day. And to go that long with working, and you get to the end of a season, or you get to a season, and a coach says you're not going to make the team, or you're still not as good as somebody that you feel like you worked harder than, or you're not going to start, or you're just in a situation where people don't think you're good enough, or they like this person better. And then that's where the faith really kicks in a lot for me sometimes with football, because I'm like, I can work this hard, and you don't even know if the fruits of your labor are going to come that next year. They might come 5 years from now. But you still have to go bang your head up against this beast every single day. And the only way that you really can be able to do that is you got to have Christ. And that's something that I learned. Because when you try to do that on your own, it will drive you absolutely crazy. You can work your butt off all offseason. And you'll come in that first game. And if you don't play well, it will absolutely kill you. Because you've been practicing so hard to, like, get this, you know, notoriety, to go out there and be successful, to prove to the city of Philadelphia that this is the team, this is the year, and you're the guy to go do it. And then when you're not able to do it sometimes, you think, wow, I'm a failure. You know, obviously I wasn't enough. But the whole time is God calling you, hey, this is so small, you know. And I know it's hard sometimes to say it to Philadelphia Eagles fans, but it's just the reality of it. I got the mic, I'm going to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
It's the reality of it. This is so minuscule in the grand scheme of everything that's going to go on in eternity. I mean, this is literally like a quick second. And so when I started realizing that and I started being more prayerful and I started being around men of God, it made that daily challenge of playing in the NFL so much easier. When God said, no, you're not going to have 100 yards today. You're not going to have a catch. You're going to block for the running back. It made that so much easier. No, you're not going to talk back to your coach when he gets on you, even though you know you're trying to do the right thing. No, you're not going to clap back to people on Twitter when they talk to you, but they ain't never played football in their life. I'm getting real.
Preach it.
I'm getting real. No, you're not going to do it. Why? Because you have a way higher calling. Yeah.
just so small, so minuscule. So that was something that, you know, I really learned, man. When God says, you know, no, when God says yes, it really does, man. This takes a lot of faith being able to play in this league. But with him, you know, it makes it so much easier. You have peace with it.
Good, man. It's real good. I would say for me is contentment, or probably a better way to put it, discontentment. And so for me, what that looks like is kind of as I was growing up in high school, college, NFL, for me, it was like every day I needed to prove it. And so for me, I could never be content with where I was at. And even now to this day, too, it's the contentment of my heart as I really try to evaluate it and to really try to look at it as saying, all right, am I content with where, God, you have me, with what I have, the things I have? You know, sometimes I see my mindset or my thought process thinking, oh, if I just had this, or if this was like this, then I could be even happier, or if this was like that, or if I had this much more, this contract, or if I was like this, that, or if I played 10 years in the league, or if I did this, or if my family was here with me, or if we were in, you know, wherever it might be, or if they were with me. There's all these things of being content. And really the reality of it is, as you strip it back, and as I've been really kind of studying this, and reading a lot about this in God's word, you know, it's really, when I'm looking at those things to find and to give me contentment, I'm really saying, okay, God, you're not enough, because I'm trying to find contentment in these things.
That's good.
And so as you guys think about the challenge, you guys too, and I don't know if you guys, and I think as men, we struggle with this, but is if we really are looking at who God is and the greatness and the vastness of who he is, then we're content, because we know that he satisfies everything that we need. But see, when my eyes aren't focused on him, then the reality of it is that I start to become discontent, and then I try to find my contentment in all these other things, you know? And one of my favorite verses is Psalms 91, verses 1 and 2. And it says, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. You know, and you think about that in this time, you know, you're thinking about the Middle East here. You know, it's hot, summertime, you know, and so this psalmist is here, and it's given this reflection or this portrayal of, you know, just the time that these people are living in, right? And these people would really understand this, because everybody was in kingdoms in that time, right? And so the reality of it is that if you were under the kingship of a good king, it was a big, strong king. That's kind of like the analogy that you would give. Well, the reality of it is that if God is our king, right, we serve a big God who is very great and he's very vast. And see, just as God stands in his greatness and his vastness, and if you were under the kingdom of a big, great king, then the reality of it is that when the oppression of the world or the hardships that come, you know, in that time, the metaphor for that would be the sun, right? Because it was so hot and it was so difficult. But as the sun would beat down, just as God stands in his bigness and his tallness, if you were under an earthly king that stands in his bigness and his vastness, then the reality of it is that they cast a big shadow. As that sun comes down, the king stands in his mighty vastness, and the shadow that goes behind them is so big, and all of the people can rest in it. And so when you think about that, that God's saying, look, I'm a big, strong God. You see, when the sun beats down, or lack of a better word, when the oppression comes from this world, you see, I cast a big shadow that you, my people, can rest in. And just in the same way is that those people in those kingdoms, they could rest in the bigness and the vastness of the king in that time, because they knew they had strength in their kingdom. And so for me, as I look at that and I say, man, you know, it says, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. So, man, God's word's telling me, man, I need to dwell in who you are, in the vastness and the bigness and the shadow of who you are, because you give me safety, you give me comfort, and you gave me contentment. And when I do that, and when I rest in him, then my heart's content, and I have joy, and I have peace, and I love people, and I serve people, and I do things that are unselfish rather than selfish. And, you know, it's just kind of a whole transformation of my mind and in my heart to really serve God in his greatest capacity. So.
So with that, you have a bad game and you walk off the field. How do you make that separation? Because it's not just you then when you go home. There's friends, there's family, there's a circle, a network. So how do you manage that? Because we all know, as men, there's life's disappointments. You know, we can look at walking off the field as anything that happens in our lives. We have that bad day, we have that bad moment. How do we recenter? How do we find that sense of, all right, it's going to be good? And not simply just being as clergy, you know, because we have some experience in dealing with that kind of stuff, but you know, the intensity of being on the field and then walking off. How do you manage that?
It's good.
I think, you know, for me, I believe that we're called to honor God when the good and when it's bad and when it's ugly. You know, I don't think you're only supposed to honor God when it's good, when everything's going well, you know, when you're winning. I think God wants and is calling and looking for people to honor him when things are going bad too as well. But I think that's one of the biggest things I really struggled with in college was I just had my daughter my junior year in college. I had just got married my junior year in college. So before that, everything was me. You know, everything was football and me, and all I was worried about was myself. And I really had to learn how to turn off my football mode, or my warrior mode, as I like to call it. When I step off the field, I'm turning off warrior mode, and I'm going home, and I'm going to love my wife, you know, and I'm going to be there for my daughter. So, and that was, I had to meet with somebody for weeks, man. I'm talking about maybe a whole year, just to really have to really understand that, you know, football isn't everything, you know, and then there is life after football. And, you know, when we're in the locker room, when we're on the field, we're so competitive, you know. We want to win. We don't ever want to lose. We're always fighting each other. We're always, you know, talking trash to each other all the time. And I think, you know, for me, going home and just butting heads with my wife, trying to win, just because I'm just getting off the football field. I'm always trying to win things. So we're always butting heads, and we're not seeing the eye to eye on a lot of things. So I think I just really had to learn how to turn my warrior off and be the man that God calls me to be outside or off the football field.
I think for me, the biggest thing I had to learn too was I had to learn how to exist in the spiritual instead of being in the physical, and that was big for me because, you know, it's about what I started to surround myself with and what I fed myself with. If I only fed myself with, like, highlights of my favorite players and what I felt like we were supposed to accomplish, you know, on this football field, and that was the only thing that was going to satisfy me, if I didn't reach that goal, then there was no way I was going to be happy. You know, the only thing that made sense was going out there and winning that game. And then my mind started shifting to the fact that, you know, when I go out there and play, I should do everything to glorify God. You know, so that in itself is going to make me work hard. That's what is going to make me give my all to my team. That's what's going to make me want to go out there and try to win. But if we don't win, as long as I did it for the glory of God, it's still okay. But I learned that I had to start existing more in the spiritual than the physical, and that's what helped me get over some of those situations. When I say that, it's like, okay, what does that look like? Well, you know, after games last year, sometimes I'd be so upset if we lost or I didn't play well. But for some reason, if I played some gospel music, things just seem to get better. Mm-hmm. And you can't explain it. You really can't. But it's like, why do, when I put on this gospel music, I cannot help but be happy. Mm-hmm. I can't help but seem like the things in this world really aren't that crazy and that big to make me feel depressed. You know, it's funny, my pastor said this once, kind of graphic, but he said, you know, nobody ever did a drive-by listening to the gospel, but it's so true. You can't be angry and do it. You know, let's just be really honest. It does something to you when you feel like you have God on your shoulder, you know? And so I started learning how to do that. It's like, man, the first thing I would do now when I would leave games in the last season is I would go home and I would put on some gospel. And whether we won or whether we lost, that was going to center me. Because don't think that it's only bad results whenever you lose. Because sometimes when you win, the evil comes too. So that, sometimes that's worse than anything. You know, Ghost told me one of the best quotes ever. He says, success and failure are both imposters.
That's right.
You know, they're both imposters. They'll make you act a certain way. They'll make you change what you do. They'll make you change your routine. They'll make you look at God differently. Oh, God loves me more because we won. No, he loves you the same when you win and when you lose. You know, he wants you to act the same when you win and when you lose. But the only way you do that is you have to learn how to exist in the spiritual throughout the whole entire time. And then once you're able to do that, then the things in this world really don't seem that big. They don't shake you. When you go win a championship, you're not trying to go out and go, you know, take down 30,000, you know, alcoholic beverages, you know. And then when you lose, you're not trying to do the same thing, you know. So I guess that was the biggest thing for me, was learning how to separate the two and understand that, okay, this is monetary. This is not the end of the world. How can I actually go beyond this world and be a step ahead of whether we win or whether we lose? And that's just existing that spiritual and keeping God close to me.
That's a good question. You know, it's, you know, how do we flip the switch when we lose or when things get bad? You know, that's is deep for me because I'll share a story with you guys. My fourth year in the league, I was playing for the Seattle Seahawks. We won the Super Bowl that year. And we were playing the tennis.
In case y'all didn't know.
World champions, 43-8 Denver Broncos, New York. Nah, anyways. But the crazy thing was is I had really had been working up as an undrafted free agent, and this was really kind of my breakout year. My third, fourth year was really kind of when I was breaking out. And the Seahawks just put this huge article on me. I was the front page of the magazine. I had the whole centerfold. I had a huge story on me. It was like, this is the moment. And coincidentally, the same game, me, Russell Wilson, Russell Okun, Clint Gresham, a couple of our coaches, we all made this DVD and we handed it out to about 50,000 people at our stadium about our faith. And we kind of just showed them, you know, what does God want to do? This is what God's done in our life. And so this is really, it was like the game. I was like, man, Lord, you're really using me, you know? And we get right before halftime and we go down, we kick off and our kicker goes in to make a tackle and he gets like a concussion, right? So he's out. So our punter's now the kicker. Well, when I was in college, I was a holder. And so they were like, hey, we need somebody that can hold the ball for our punter to actually kick now. So I'm like, oh, bet I got this. This is good. I did this 4 years in college. I was doing fakes and stuff, scoring touchdowns. So anyways, so we get out there. Aaron Andrews on the sideline. I'm out there warming up with our guys. And I'm like, he's giving me laces. I'm spinning it out perfect. Like, I haven't done this in 4 years. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, let's go, man. So we drive down. We get to about the 10-yard line. And there's like 4 seconds left. They go down, get the timeout. So I'm like, good. We get out there, ball snap, perfect, right? I go to put it down. That bad boy slipped out my hand like a bar of soap in the shower. That thing slipped right out. So then I'm like, I wasn't expecting that, right? So I pick it up, and I roll around the right side. I'm yelling, fire, fire, fire. And I roll out, and I go to throw it. Nobody's out there, so I'm like, I'm just going to throw this bad boy away, right? So I go to throw it away. The corner from the backside comes back, strips my arm. The ball fumbles, he picks it up and runs 90 yards for a touchdown with no time left. And we got booed the whole way off of the thing. And we ended up actually winning the game, which, oh, man, I was so thankful for. God, you're here with me. But
glory.
The crazy thing was, after the game, it was like probably the most embarrassing thing. I was like number two on not top 10 plays, you know, where they like play the clown music. But the crazy thing was we were at this like signing for this like video, you know, premiere that we did. It was like, man, we worked on this thing for a year. And it was crazy because God was really checking my heart and he was like, man, like this isn't about you. He was like, everything about your whole life is about me,
yeah.
You know, and it's not about you. And so, you know, you just get to be a part of the work that I'm doing. And I was really kind of thinking that he kind of really spoke that to me in like a still small voice. And I remember thinking about that, and I was like, man, you know, you're right. You know, everything I do is about you. And so when you talk about bouncing back from a bad game or how do you flip the switch, you know, I think we in a world, we look at success as like great things happening, right? I think from God's eyes, success is just being faithful with the platform that you've been given, regardless of the outcome. And I think we look so much on the outcome basis on success. God looks at it and says, man, if you're faithful, regardless of whether things are good or bad in your life, if you have faithfulness to me, that's success. And God honors that and he sees that. And he was really kind of speaking that to my heart and saying, hey, it's not about the results. It's about the faithfulness within what you're doing. And so I would say that's a big thing, whether it's up or down, you know, for me.
I had one more question for me. And are we going to open it up at one point in time? Yeah. And actually, guys, we've just started talking about this just a little bit, not going real deep in Bible study. But, you know, you guys are handsome in the NFL.
They are. I got a radio face.
Right.
Give us a 10.
Two of you are married. One is single.
The brother.
and again, this is the door closed. You know, this is Temple Men. This is about being a man. How do you all deal with temptation? How do you deal with the fact that you're talking about money? Along with money is sex, women. You know, I'm familiar. I didn't hear about any of y'all, but I'm familiar that, you know, there are even times with NFL players where they go to their rooms and there's women in there. Wait.
That type of pressure. Again, it's the type of stuff that never happened to any of us. But how do you all deal with that? How do you, as not only just as married men, but just your men of God, even being a single man, how do you deal with that type of pressure, that type of temptation when it comes?
No, you first. One of you guys go first.
Let's see how long you talk.
This is a great question. I just pray. No, I don't know. No, you know, you're right, Pastor Ted. You know, when we walk in hotels, whenever we're on the road, I mean, there's women in the lobbies waiting. I mean, they're just, hey, all you need is just the little head nod. You know what I mean? Just that's it. You know, and so I think it's all around. I think when you're at this level, you got to be on guard because, you know, there's a verse talking about, you know, the enemy, the devil prowls around like a lion waiting to devour, you know, mm-hmm. And it's like, man, he's trying to destroy us, man. He's trying to bring all this temptation and the sin in our lives to really dictate and destroy who we are, you know. And so, you know, that's the biggest thing I would say. I would say this. We talked about this in Bible study. You know, you guys might agree with this. This was last week. Yeah. And Pastor did a great job kind of explaining this to us. But what he was saying is that when you're so immersed and fulfilled by God, right, you're so full and satisfied in him, you don't want anything else. It's like he gave the analogy of when you eat something so much, like you could have the best steak, a 100-ounce filet mignon, right, and you eat so much of it, right, that it doesn't matter how great, it could be the best steak in the world. Once you get to that point where you've been so full, you can't think about eating another bite. I don't know if you guys have ever been that way before, right? But it's the same way, like when you're immersed in God and when you're so filled by him, you can't think about even doing anything else because you're so satisfied that you can't think about consuming anything else. And so if we're satisfied in who God is, completely full in him, then we won't want to desire those things anymore because we don't have a desire for those anymore. You know, we're fulfilled and we're satisfied. So for me, that's the only repellent that I see, man, because I know my flesh, man, my heart wanders and it's hard, it's difficult, you know, and you got to stay on guard. But I mean, you guys might talk about the accountability aspect, but man, having dudes like this around, man, I mean, shoot, when my boys are around, man, you know, they're checking me all the time. You know what I mean?
Just,
you know, keep me to get out of there, man. Here.
So this is a single hour. So all single. Okay. I'm gonna be real with you guys. For me, man, my walk with women, that was always my hardest thing. I realized, you know, probably once I got to NFL, like any other sin I ever committed was really because of women. I was like, I wasn't a big drinker, but if I drank, it was to talk to women. If I didn't lie much to my parents, then they curse around them. But if I cursed and I lied, it was to cover up something with a woman. And so I realized that was a catalyst really for most of my sins. And then that goes into pride. And then that was the big reason why I always felt like, you know, I wanted women. But I just thought, oh, I'm a man. I'm a young man. This is just something you go through. And it wasn't until I started talking with Pastor Ted and another pastor here, Pastor Kyle, and we started kind of breaking it down, you know. And it was crazy. Pastor Kyle called me up one day. He just wanted to talk about it because he knew I'd been dealing with it. I'd been talking to Trey a lot about it because I really wanted to get out this funk because I was like, I feel like I want these women. But the second I get done doing anything, I'm going to be real with y'all, doing anything sexual with them, I felt awful. I felt terrible. I was like, there was something in my heart that I was like, why do I feel so empty? What's this void? And so I started talking to Pastor Kyle. I said, you know, what's going on, man? Like, I feel empty. He said, Jordan, why do you do it? Why do you have sex? And I said, I don't know. I think I like girls. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I know if he was coming to me. So I was like, I like girls, you know, Pastor. You know what I'm saying? But this is a joke, guys. So, it was crazy because, you know, I was like, he said, I mean, yeah, I understand that, but do you like sex? And I said, well, I don't know, you know, I think I do, like I do it, so of course I do. He said, no, you really don't. How do you feel afterwards? I said, awful. He said, do you feel awful after you play football? I said, not really, I love playing football. He said, all right, you feel awful after you talk to your mom? I said, no, he said, because you love doing that. He said, you don't love sex, you think you like sex. He said, you like the things that sex gives you because you feel like by doing it, you feel a sense of love for yourself. And I was like, you know, break that down for me because I really don't get what you're getting at. And so once he started breaking it down for me, we went all the way back to college and we started peeling back the layers. And he was like, for you to go out and score touchdowns and to be the man in college was not enough. Because whether you won games or whether you lost games, when you went back to your room and you were by yourself, you didn't have enough love for God, enough love for yourself to be able to be content with being in that realm and be by yourself and still be able to love the environment you were in. You always need to bring somebody else in to help validate who you were. You always felt like getting the most girls, being around the most women, being the guy who had girls liking him, that was what would make you feel important. That's how you felt loved. That's how you felt full. And us having that conversation really opened my eyes, because I was realizing that I didn't love what I was doing. The thing that I really didn't love was I didn't love myself. I didn't have enough love of myself and enough love for God that he supplies to me that makes me love myself to be able to sit in a place and in a room alone with him and be content and to be at peace. And once I started realizing that, I was like, man, that doesn't make me a man going out and having women and looking at women and wanting all these girls and watching pornography and feeling like, you know, that was going to make me cool. What made me a man was being able to sit by myself and read the word and grow spiritually. And once my eyes were open to that, it was such a transforming thing, because I realized, like, I can learn this lesson at 22. Mm-hmm. I can learn this lesson at 23. There's no age requirement on enlightenment. You don't got to wait till you're 40, 50 to start saying, okay, here are the changes I need to make in my life. And it was so eye-opening for me, because I realized, like, wow, the things I need to be focusing on is my love for Christ. And once I started doing that, it made the way I looked at women so much different. It made the way I looked at other guys going after and getting women so much differently. It affected my relationship with my mom. It made me open up to my brothers about what was going on. You know, other women who I had talked to, I was able to talk, call them, say, hey guys, we're not going to be doing the same things we were doing. I don't live that life anymore. And it was just so, it was such a huge moment for me. And like he said about the accountability part, that is so huge. When you're around other men who are married, like these are the guys I choose to hang out with now. You have a married mindset. And even if I don't have an actual wife, like my relationship with God, he says the temple, you know, the church is like, you know what I'm saying? It's like the bride, you know what I'm saying? So it's the same exact thing. And so now I'm going on that walk now. And I'm not just completely single. I got a girlfriend too. So y'all got, yeah, so I'm not just like weird. Y'all got to pray for me though, man. She beautiful, you know what I'm saying? So it's a battle, man. It's every day I wake up, I'm like, man, please, like wear just some sweatpants and a hoodie and a mask just so, you know, we can make it through. But I tell you what, man, it's huge. No, because I call Trey every time I go out and run. Like, hey, pray for me, you know, pray for me, because I want this thing to last. And if I can't continue to trade in, you know, eternal, you know, peace for temporary pleasure. And that was one thing that I really started to learn. Like he said, I mean, you got to have guys around you that are willing to pray for you and that are willing to walk that walk with you and can be that example for you when you can't be it for yourself. So that's just huge for me. And that's why I really kind of got out of it.
I mean, there's not too much for me to say. These guys took everything. But I think when you look at that, and you know, you look at people who have made that mistake, or they might have cheated on their wife, and you look at that and you're like, man, how could it's your wife? Because you love your wife so much and you would never want her to go through that type of stuff. But if you look at it even further, like, how could you do that to God? You know, and you got to look at it spiritually and even greater than your wife. Yeah, you love your wife, but you should love God. You know, God should be the center of your relationship, and you should love him more than you love anything else. So you're not only doing it to your wife and your children, you know, but you're also doing it in front of God and to God. And then, like they said, you know, the accountability and having people, you know, bad company corrupts good people, that type of stuff. So having good people in your circle, good people you can kick it with and chop it up with and call whenever you're in trouble. That's also key.
Got three now, right? Which voice do you listen to, right?
Yeah. So we have a few moments because these incredible guys have to go to church. So it is Sunday. So we're going to take a couple of questions. Julie, you want to get started, huh? So we'll have a couple questions, and then if there's time, we can take a group picture with the guys for Men's Club. But what an amazing, amazing conversation this has been. Let's just give it up.
Julian, you want to start us off?
This question's for Chris. In that game when you were playing the Patriots with a few seconds left before half, did you know that something special was going to happen, like the Bob Trumpet?
That's a great question. You know, honestly, I would say, is this loud enough?
Good question, man. You know, we felt like we had a pretty good block on, and you know, it was right before the half, so we knew we were going to have to kind of settle out to you know, to get the block there. And you know, honestly, really, my teammates really set it up. Brian Brand, Trey, Ed Reynolds, Kenyon Barner, everybody did their part in really kind of opening up for me. And so, really, those guys drew a bunch of attention, and I was able to kind of squeak through there and make a play, and fortunately we were able to actually just scoop it up and actually get into the end zone to actually get the point. So that was a good thing. We didn't just fall on it. Najee Good did a great job scooping it up and actually getting into the end zone. So that was big for us. But yeah, I had a feeling that it might have happened, and we were going to try to do our best to do it, and it worked out really well for us.
Good morning. Thank you so much for coming out today. Being a season ticket holder for 50 years, the pregame for me is insane at a game. Can you share with us what it's like for you pregame in the locker room, coming through the tunnel, and the aftermath of a win or a loss in the locker room?
Man, pregame is amazing, man. I love it. Just the feeling, the music, going out and warming up. I think even I get more of a sense of how blessed of a situation I am at pregame, not even doing games. Because once you lock into the game, I mean, I don't see nothing but red. You know, it's on. Mm-hmm. But when you come out pregame, you just kind of look up and you see, you know, the stadium. You see the link. I mean, it's an amazing thing. And then when you're stepping on that grass, like, this is where Randall Cunningham played. Like, these are where, you know, Donovan McNabb, you know, Terrell Owens, like Brian Westbrook, Brian Dawkins, you know, the greats play here. So be able to put on that jersey is really humbling, to be, you know, really honest, you know. So the feeling, I mean, I can't even explain it. But I don't know, just before the game is always great. We're always playing music. We're always getting each other excited. I mean, don't think for one second we don't understand the passion that the fans bring and the responsibility that it means to be able to play for the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, we take it extremely seriously. So just that whole time in the locker room, it's like, hey, it's go time, you know, so we really enjoy that. And then after a game, the atmosphere, you know, it's kind of different, man. You know, I think in college you have like one set, one, because everybody's in the same realm. But in the NFL, man, there's so many different dynamics to every player. We're all dealing with different things. This guy's married. This guy's a rookie. This guy isn't getting paid enough. This guy's getting paid way too much. This guy, you know. And then, you know, so there's not – I can't sit here and tell you, oh, when we lose, everybody's just – you know, man, some guys, they put on their Gucci's and they're out. You know what I'm saying? Then other guys, you know, they might play a bad game. He's going to be sitting in his locker for, you know, 50 minutes, you know, not wanting to answer any questions. So the NFL is a very different dynamic. It's very – it can be strange at times, but – I will say, though, being in Philadelphia, though, we do understand, I feel like, the responsibility on us to go out there and win for this city. So we do take the losses in that locker room. Everybody takes them seriously. There's a respect level for it, I should say, where even if it doesn't affect you maybe as much as, like, let's say the quarterback who might have played bad, everybody understands, hey, you know, this was for this city, this is for this team, this is for this legacy. You know, they take it pretty seriously, you know, win or loss.
The lifestyle and the commitment to Christ that the three of you, you know, demonstrate is an amazing thing. And, you know, got to meet you guys before at, you know, Living Faith and such. One of the most important things we're called to do as Christians is to not only be an example for ourselves and our families, but for the world. So could you speak to how the lifestyle that the three of you have made a commitment to live has maybe had an impact in the locker room and, you know, maybe pulled in somebody who was kind of going this way, who kind of wants to know a little bit about what you're doing and why you've made this stance. So I guess the general question is, what witnessing opportunities or impact on the locker room would you say that your lifestyle and your commitment has had?
I think we all can do that one.
I think for me, I'm not a big speaker. I'm not really, I don't do too well speaking in front of people, and definitely don't, you know, do too well like in a setting like this. But
if you can believe.
Yeah. I'm more of an example guy, you know, and that's really how I learn best is I need to see it. Like, you can tell me whatever you, but I won't really remember it too well. I need to see what's going on. So I really take that to heart, and I really understand that some people learn that way, and so that's why I live the way I live. That's why, you know, I talk to the people I do, and I'm more of like a one-on-one type session. So like Jordan and I, we'll kick it all the time. He's three or four lockers down from me, and you know, a lot of times we end up right next to each other, just talking and talking about life, and he knows and goes, and they all know I'm a phone call away. So I'm the type of guy that people, you know, want to talk one-on-one to instead of talking to a bunch of people in a group like that. Does that answer your question to some degree? Yeah. Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Trey's from the school you reproduce, you know, who you are, not what you say.
Yeah.
And it's huge with that. I mean, literally, that's helped me a lot because you can have, you know, you have that person who's telling you great advice, and you all these quotes, all, but if they don't live it, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, so you need those guys in your life, and Trey's been that with me, and it's been extremely instrumental in my faith walk. I think for me, you know, as far as being that witness, being that Bible that people read and kind of evangelizing to our communities, you know, I think one of the worst things that ever happened to, you know, our communities, and not you guys' generation, but obviously the generations coming up after you guys, is everybody being able to watch each other. It's social media. It's what my man's growing up in. The social media era is absolutely terrible because, you know, growing up for you guys, you guys could be at least content in your surroundings, because then when you guys turn on the TV and see sometimes like the movie star or something, y'all would think, oh, they're all crazy, but you guys would still be at least be able to be content in your own surroundings. You know, well, that's not the case anymore. You know, suicide levels are rising in young teens because everybody's comparing their lives to other people. You know, everybody wants to be like this superstar, this, and it's not just, oh, a person on TV, it's a person that they can follow every single day. And then it's not only that celebrity, it's even the person who has the most money in school. I can see that person go out and post all these things, you know, at the beach and stuff. And why don't we have that, mom? And so it's that comparison factor. I heard somebody say, you know, comparison is the key to unhappiness. And so I say all that to say is, for us, I feel like the biggest thing for me, because I've realized that I've had to be a light, not only for some of my teammates, but also for some of my family, is that the way I live with this platform is going to be the biggest way that I evangelize to them. You know, when I go to my family reunion, how do I act? Am I going to show out and pull up in a Bugatti and act like I'm better than everybody? Or am I going to continue to be the same Jordan that they knew when I was growing up? Am I going to be the same humble person that says, hey, I know I have this job and I have all these things, but the most important thing in my life is being here with my family, being here in this faith-filled room with my grandma. Like this right here in Mississippi, this is being rich. This is having money. That pond outside that we can go out and go talk about Christ at, that's having money. That's what being rich is about. That's what being wealthy is. Because honestly, anything that we have on this earth is going to burn. Everything. Like, you can store up as much as you want. If you die today, you know they're going to send it off somewhere. That's just the reality of it. You know, I'm sorry about it, but that's the truth. I don't even know why I'm telling you sorry, because if you die today, you ain't going to hear nothing else. You know what I'm saying? That's real, though. It's so real. And it's something that, you know, I learned, like, over time while I was in this field, is that this right here is the most that people are going to care about. Trey, me, and Ghost. Notice I said people, but not Christ. You know, the most people are going to care about us when the second we walk out of this in the league, they're going to bring more Eagles in here, and then there'll be other guys sitting right here. And that's a blessing, but at the same time for us, we need to know that. And we need to look in the mirror and understand, like, hey, that's the reality of it. So what are we doing now to actually build the kingdom while we have this platform? And it's all about what Trey said, and I know Marico's going to enlighten on too, is about how you live. It's about being that Bible that people can read. And it's the people obviously close to you, but also people that you go out and you go meet in the community, the other people in your church. You know, when rabbi's coming to you and he's saying, hey, I need your help with something, he ain't asked the other person, so you're like, why is he giving me all this? Be a servant. You know, is it going to kill you? No. But can it uplift you? Can it bring you life? Honestly, yes. And that's something that, you know, I grew to learn. And it's just like, you never know who's really watching. And the more you do those things, people are going to see you, and then that's going to bring up other people. And it's one of the most beautiful things ever is when you know that, okay, when somebody comes to you and says, hey, I saw how you lived, and that affected my life too. So I think that's huge for all of us.
J-Man hit it on the head. He said, you know, I've heard this, you know, the saying, out of 100 people, one will read the scriptures, the other 99 will read the man. You know, and I think when you look at that, being that example of what it looks like, but then also speaking, you know, when you need to. You know, I mean, it's not just enough to be an example. You got to speak that truth as well into people's lives. I think one of the biggest misconceptions that people have is, and especially, you know, if we come and speak at something like this, people go, oh, man, you know, if we just had the platform you guys had, if I was just an NFL player, then I could really be used by God in a great capacity. Man, God's placed you guys uniquely in people's lives that we can't touch. Whether it's at your work, whether it's around your community, wherever you are, it's being that light and that witness where you are. And I think being faithful within that platform, because it's not the size of the platform, it's the faithfulness within it. And I think that's the key is just being used where you're at, you know, being used where you're at. I think that's the biggest thing. So.
So on behalf of Temple Emmanuel, and we are so grateful for your words today, because there were some people coming in saying, you know, I like the Eagles, they're going to talk about football. I think that we were all very pleasantly surprised to hear what these incredible words. On behalf of a very grateful group of people, we listen and we say, because you're not supposed to pray that, you know, that God is an Eagles fan and that this is going to be that season. We can pray, and we hope and we pray that God continues to bless you. As Moses said to Joshua, with chizkud imsu, with strength and courage, to do what needs to be done to make a difference and to inspire your teammates to have that faith that will carry them not just through a game, but through life. Give you that strength and courage, and know that we have a Kehila Kadosha, a holy community that continues to support everything that you guys do. Thank you, and God bless you as you go.
For more information on the Temple Emmanuel Men's Club, visit templeemmanuel.org. This program is a production of the Lubetkin Media Companies, which is solely responsible for its content. For everyone at Temple Emmanuel, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you out there on the net. Go Eagles!